Hello and welcome to Weichert's latest Workforce Mobility Podcast, where we examine topics of interest to those who manage and deploy mobile talent. In this episode, we're focusing on a topic that most corporate relocation managers are familiar with, for better or worse, and that's exceptions. And we're happy to have with us two subject matter experts who will enable us to appreciate exceptions from both the domestic and the global perspectives. Jennifer Cannell is the director of the North American practice within Weichert's Consulting Services Group, and Laura Levinson is director of our global consulting practice. And I thank you both for joining us. Just to get us started and to ensure a mutual understanding of the terminology, Laura, can you just offer what you would define as an exception?
Sure. Generally speaking, exceptions are any benefits or monetary amounts that differ from or exceed what is established in policy or letter of understanding, or as benefits are formally communicated to a potential transferee, assignee, and or their accompanying family members. It's worthwhile to understand and analyze exceptions and trends developing with exception requests within an organization or in the mobility industry in a broad sense to really understand why they become obstacles and assess the impact of the exception, and then to identify some solutions or best practices. When we talk about exceptions, it's important to look at what some of the common drivers of exceptions are. I've broken them down into six different categories. One is corporate culture. Some cultures within a corporation completely inhibit requests for special treatment, while in others it's expected that employees will always ask for something above and beyond or different from what is provided in a guideline. Number two, policy setup. If a policy includes language telling the individual what to do in the event of an exception, then the policy style is really inviting exceptions to process and provisions. Number three, process. And sometimes if a process is too cumbersome, this can be the cause of an exception request. So for an example, let's take the case of household goods. If you analyze the exception rate of online haul charges and the percentage of moves that require them, you will find that more than 50% do require them, and therefore it might make sense to either consider them to be a standard practice or continue treating them as exceptions, but empower your global mobility team to make decisions about authorizing these services when they're needed. Number four, efficiency. Often it's less costly, time and effort count as cost, by the way, to say yes to an alternative requested if there's no financial impact to the exception. Cost, however, especially in the above situation, is really important to consider, because sometimes it may look like an alternative requested doesn't have a financial impact, but certainly there are hidden costs that need to be taken into account, such as tax gross-up and ancillary incidentals. So let's say timing of a shipment arrival with the permanent move may necessitate providing storage, which in turn may be less expensive than renting furniture or providing a furnished apartment. And six, last but not least, I would say is precedent. Precedent is a serious concern when granting an exception. Always assume that word will travel once an exception has been provided. If yours is not a culture that grants certain types of exceptions, once you do it once, you open the opportunity to your entire mobile population, because word definitely does travel quickly.
Jen, in your experience working with companies and helping them refine their programs and policies, do you see most companies have a formal process in place for dealing with exceptions?
Well, I can't say that most companies have a formal process in place, but I am seeing an increase in companies that are exploring options on how to put in place proper controls in order to manage exceptions with some sort of guidelines around that. These kind of controls, they force the employee to really think about what they're asking for and to manage their expectations. We're also seeing companies managing these exceptions by employing a pre-decision program even before the move takes place. So we've seen this be a successful strategy for managing the employee's expectations. And in fact, companies that do have a pre-decision program do report fewer exceptions overall.
So Laura, what about on the global side within your area of practice? Do you see the same thing?
Yes. We see many companies actually with a formal exception process that typically involves various escalation points and approval levels depending on the cost and nature of the exception. I'd say this is a good thing when it inhibits unnecessary spending, but it's not such a good thing when it slows down the process and results in service issues due to slow response time. I also want to mention that I think that there is a correlation between the number of exceptions requested and the complexity or formality of the exception process. So, for example, a person's less likely to request business class tickets for a 2 or 3 hour flight when the request has to go to the company treasurer. Now, that may be an exaggeration, but there is a degree of inhibition when the request involves many approval levels. So I guess at the end of the day, best practice could be to not advertise the process for requesting exceptions in a policy document, because I believe that invites the attitude that rules are meant to be broken or that the rules don't apply to me. So it's best to be prepared with the process if and when the request is made, and only then is it really appropriate to share what that process will be in writing, and best to do so in writing so the individual understands that it is formalized and the process will take place.
So Jen, you just compiled the results of our 2013 Employee Workforce Mobility Survey. What do the results of that survey show you as far as what companies are dealing with as far as, say, the top three exceptions?
Well, not much of a surprise from the results of our survey. They showed that the most common are still related to the housing market. The top three exceptions were temporary living, extending overall time frames, and duplicate living expenses. These are all the most common and are a direct result of the housing market.
Now, Laura, in your area of expertise and your area of focus, what would you say are the top exceptions there? Are there any parallels, or do you see some completely different things?
Well, without a doubt, when we polled all of our clients, including those with headquarter operations in EMEA and Asia Pacific, as well as North America, the same three areas of exception all showed up. Extensions of temporary living, special needs for household goods, such as special crating and packing, extra pickup stops from storage, or special delivery methods, particularly in Europe, where front door entryways are not designed for the size of modern furniture, as well as housing budget. And it is important to note that in certain locations, especially in Asia Pacific and Latin America, the housing market fluctuates significantly and frequently. So often adjustments to budget are needed more often than they would be in the rest of the world. And sometimes it's simply lack of exposure to the entire marketplace. People have a tendency to limit themselves to where they know other expats from their companies are living. And actually, there may be other options out there that they're just not aware of because these emerging markets are sort of less mature and there's less exposure to the overall market, so less is known about the options available.
So, Jen, if I can jump back to you for a second, you had just a moment ago mentioned the top exceptions that you saw in our survey results. Did any of those exceptions surprise you?
Well, what surprised me about the results of our survey is that we're finding that recruiters and HR directors have been voicing the need to be able to offer a different set of benefits at a moment's notice, which might be resulting in these exceptions. And the results that I mentioned earlier really enforce this trend. In fact, the majority of companies feel that they provide flexible benefits either through the use of a lump sum or, more importantly, exceptions in order to offer additional benefits, which might be increasing the overall cost of the program, by the way.
So, Laura, in your area of focus, looking at things from the global perspective, was there anything about the top exceptions that surprised you?
No, I have to say I wasn't really surprised that regardless of where you are in the world, the same issues and concerns related to relocating are really the ones that drive exception requests. The patterns really could be telling us that companies need to loosen up and provide more flexibility in these areas, and we've already seen that based on the number of requests we get on a very regular basis to develop core flex programs where both the assignee and the mobility group has some flexibility in determining which provisions are included in a program. And also, it's not really always the case that a major city will be more expensive than a secondary city wherever you go in the world. And that's simply due to availability and variety in those newly developing locations. So I guess that you could say that was a little bit of a surprise to find that in the emerging markets of China and Brazil and India, as examples, that some of the times secondary cities are actually less expensive than the major ones because of what's available versus what's available in a larger city.
Are exceptions always, are they always bad? Are they always a bad thing? Are there some instances in which they could be good things?
Well, I don't necessarily consider exceptions to be a bad thing because they do allow companies the ability to provide extra assistance in certain circumstances. Of course, however, too many exceptions can show that there's not enough control, and this can really subject the program to risk of noncompliance, which goes back to the discussion that we had about putting the proper controls in place to manage exceptions.
Now, Jen, talking about giving exceptions upon exceptions, if companies start to give out too many exceptions and they're already giving out benefits, as these things add up, do you ever see cases where companies are actually being too generous with what they're giving employees to get them to move?
Well, it really depends on the company's culture and industry whether the benefits are too generous, which makes measuring acceptance rates as well as attrition rates after the move or assignment as important as managing the exceptions. We've seen caps become a popular way for companies to limit benefits and encourage transparency of costs to the employees as well as the business unit. We found that today the vast majority of companies do contain costs through the use of caps on at least some benefits. Most commonly, we see them in through the miscellaneous allowance, any home sale incentives, as well as temporary living time frames. And of course, it's important to know what is considered too generous for the industry, and benchmarking does have its place in doing this. It's often not the benefits that are too generous. It's the way that they're being administered. We found that tiered programs are an effective way to ensure that employees are not receiving too generous level of benefits. And I also look at renter benefits among programs. Those benefits and maximums should be scaled back to reflect a different level of needs. And flexible approaches are another way to observe caps and accommodate different sets of employees.
Well, some great information here. Laura and Jennifer, thank you both very much for your time. And thank you, folks, for listening, and hopefully you'll tune in for our next podcast. Thank you.